Okay, so in session two, we are going to cover what is a build and why do you need one, and we're actually going to create and run a build. All right? So, Vince, I just converted everything, and I'd like you to actually, I created the workspace for you because I was on your machine.
Yep.
So, can you verify all the sources there and all the histories there, too?
All right. Oh, let me see. Let's switch positions. All right. So, on my PC, you created this in workspace, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm already in that workspace?
You are.
So all I need to do is get latest then.
That's what you need to do.
Yeah, you did everything for me. That's nice. That's how I like it. So right-click on the main. Are we calling these folders?
Yeah, they're folders.
All right. On the main, in the main folder and do get latest. So
That's pretty fast.
Yeah, like I said, either we've got a very small project, which we don't. It's a multi-million project, or we have very powerful machines.
Yeah.
So let me open that up.
So, yeah.
It works, but can I open it right there?
Yeah, I think you can double click on the solution.
Okay.
Okay,
opened up everything. Can I close the Explorer right there?
Yeah, sure
right.
You can.
All right, everything looks like it's there. Click, click, right there. I think I'm going to reopen it.
Sure. Hey.
Just see if everything is there.
You don't trust me, right?
Nope.
You're a newcomer. You shouldn't.
You're a newcomer. All right. Let me see. Open recent filing position. It was in there. Okay. Let me see something.
I think the binding is...
Wow, that's screwed, eh? See? Not going to work on control.
Actually, you probably want to permanently remove that.
Yeah, let me see. Because I was under VSS.
Yes, you were.
Okay, so I need to go where? Under tools?
No, not tools. You're going to go file.
Okay.
You're going to go source control. And then change source control.
And we're going to change source control. All right, it's all unbinded.
Unbinded, okay.
Yeah.
So right now, what you're going to need to do is you're actually going to need to change your... So we know that's going to be fine, so go in tools and change your...
Okay, this is something I need to do on all my developers' machines, switch the VSS from TFS.
Actually, once you do it on yours and check it in, then when they do it, it's going to automatically connect to TFS.
Oh, right, nice. All right, so it's in the... I've already read that somewhere. It's in the tools under here somewhere.
Source control. Yep.
Microsoft SourceSafe. All right, so I need to pick Visual Studio Team Foundation Server.
That's the one.
All right, great.
All right.
So now
do I check the bindings? Now go back to where we were, yep.
All right, where was it already? Right there. Change source control. That didn't change much from VSS to TFS.
No, sounds look pretty much
and
the same.
And I do all bind,
yep.
That's all.
I'm
just
going to
bind
good.
Them all. See if it works.
Hey, looks good.
Looks good.
Yeah.
And we've shut down our VSS, so I'm sure I'm not binding to VSS. That's great. And that's the path we've used,
Exactly.
Everything's good.
Right, so it wants to check out everything.
Yeah, to change the bindings and stuff.
Sounds good.
And how do I do a check-in? Right click on the solution and then check-in. Resembles VSS,
right? I'll make sure
that's a new dialogue.
That's a little bit different. It's the pending change dialogue. It's a little bit different. We can talk about that a little later, but...
binding changes.
Yep.
Is that okay?
Yep. For now, it's all good.
I think, stuff?
All right, so we'll talk about that a little later.
Later on?
Right now.
All right. Object currently is used elsewhere. That's weird. Let me try that again. Oops, that's not what I meant.
An interesting error. So it did the check-in, but it got an error.
Yeah, well, right. We'll see that later on.
Yeah, try again, exit studio again, and try again.
Do it.
Just because, it was kind of weird, so let's do that.
All right, open. Oh, did I do it? Recent project and solution, workspace, everything. It works, and everything is not source controlled. So let me see again. Change source control. Change source control. Current version is associated with source control, but it is offline. So tell me about that build thing.
So the build thing is, first of all, I just want to make sure that we have stuff in source control. I think we saw right? Because we won't be able to do a build if we don't have anything in source control.
We will.
So we have our stuff, which is interesting. And just one thing I wanted to show you is that if we view the history here, we can see that all the stuff that was migrated from the VSS converter.
See, it did check in.
So
because that was my check in right there, binding changes. That's
interesting.
Weird.
Yeah, I don't know what the deal is here. I've never seen that before.
All right.
Let's just make a get latest here. There's no files to make. All right, so
it works.
Hopefully stuff's there. We'll test it out later.
Yeah.
So essentially here, remember I was telling you that we have an automated build, like a full-blown build server?
You kind of told me that we were going to do something about build, but what's a build?
So the build is a build is actually an output of a compilation that is not on your workstation.
Oh, I was about to say I do that all the time, rebuild.
Yeah, you do. You do F5, and that's great.
Yeah.
But the build server is actually F5 for the team.
Okay, it's right? F5 on another computer.
Correct. So now you're connected to TFS, and as you can see, we got a build node here, and there is actually no builds there. So let me show you how we create a build. It's really actually super easy. You just go here and you say new build definition, right? And then we're going to call it something because obviously we need to give it a name. So since your application is called MVVM CRM, we're going to call it that. And we're going to say that it's in the main folder because that's where it is. And I'm going to explain to you what I mean, but we're actually going to call it CI because we're going to make that a continuous integration build, all right? So I'm going to explain what that is.
All right. Right?
So here we can make a little description of what it is. I don't think we need to describe what that build's about here. Next, we're actually going to set a trigger. So that's where I was talking about continuous integration. Notice it's the second one. So the first one is manual. So you can see manual is I'm going to right click and say build me something. Right. So that's it's going to be on demand. You're going to do it whenever you want.
All right.
The continuous integration one is the one we're going to leave it on. Essentially, that means that anytime you do a check-in and it works, remember, we've had some issue there, but let's say we're going to fix that soon. When you do the continuous integration here, when you do a check-in, a build will trigger automatically. So that's really good. The next one, and we want to do that for a reason, is that we want to make sure that all the check-ins are completely built to make sure that we have end-to-end scenario covered there.
Okay.
And that build is actually going to run tests as well.
Okay, right? So it all integrates the work of all the team.
Correct.
Oh, okay, that's nice.
Yeah, so the rolling build is very similar to the continuous integration build, but it's actually going to run a build, and then it's going to create another one at every X number of minutes. So if you do that and you say run a build every 30 minutes.
That's probably what we're going to do because we got a huge solution.
Yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. We'll do the CI build and see how it works. But essentially, if you have projects that takes, for example, 20 minutes to build, you may not want to do a build every time somebody does a check-in because the problem is after the fifth check-in in, let's say, the next 10 minutes, then it's going to take almost 180 minutes before the build finishes for the fifth check-in.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a problem here, right? So if you don't put time, so if you leave it like this, then it's going to start a new build as soon as the other one finishes.
Okay.
So that's similar to CI, but if you have five check-in in between the time it takes to make the build, it's just going to go and do that. All right?
All right.
So now the next one's called gated check-in. So gated check-in is actually new in 2010, and it's actually a really cool feature. So what it does is when you do a check-in, it actually takes your check-in and puts it on a shelf. So it's kind of a private area for you, and it moves that shelf over to the build server, and it does a full get, and it applies your shelves to it, and then it runs the build. And if your build succeeds, it checks it in.
Okay, so there's no code that's not working in our code base.
Correct. So it only check in when you actually have a build that compiles.
Oh, that's nice. And same thing with the unit tests. I can switch it and I can configure it, say, if I don't have 99% or 100%.
I'm not sure you can customize the percentage, but okay. but it, you can run unit tests and see the coverage in the report,
okay.
right?
That's nice.
And then finally, the scheduled build is, you know, a scheduled build, so you can run that every night, and that's in
default.
There. All right, so we're gonna leave continuous integration for
fine.
Now. Right?
Fine,
so one thing you have to really be sure you understand here is that the project, the workspace that we create, you don't want to take the name of the project. The problem is if you do that and you have, for example, a directory for documentation
yeah.
and some other stuff, then it's going to get
slow
everything
down the build,
on the
yeah.
build server, and you don't really care about those. So what you do here is you can just go and make sure you go down to exactly where you want to pick the source. I'm going to go all the way down to source, and that's going to make a workspace with just that folder. So that's good.
That's exactly what we want.
So I'm telling you, source deer, you don't want to modify, right?
Right.
That's
not gonna mess
like
with this.
That's a variable, and essentially that says to the build agent, hey, take your source deer build agent and put your workspace where you want to put it.
Okay.
If you say here E blah 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 a directory anywhere, problem with that is if the build agent doesn't have an E drive, it's going to fail, right?
Okay, that's going to be read by something that's going to run it elsewhere.
Correct.
Okay.
So just leave source there for now, and we're all good, all right? So that's the workspace. Not really a problem, just a few gotchas to not forget. The next thing is you actually pick a build controller to send your build to.
Yes, you have already made tests.
Yeah, and we only have one on this thing because it's our server. And then you need to make a drop folder. The drop folder essentially is when it compiles, it does the F5 for itself, right?
Okay.
The build server. And then when it has an output, it takes that output and it copies it somewhere for everybody else to be able to see it, right?
So that's going to be a share.
So it is a share. Mm-hmm. And we're just going to say TFS lab because that's the name of our source server. And we're going to move it to drops. Because that's the place where we're going to put that. So that's this. And then the process. That's actually really cool. That's new. I know you didn't work with 2005 and 2008, but essentially it used to be MS build files.
Yeah, I know what that is.
Customized. Yeah.
Lots of XML. And
so here it's actually a workflow. So it's actually really, really cool. And essentially you give it here the parameters that you need to actually run the build. So you can actually completely customize that workflow to do all sorts of new stuff, surface variables in here, and makes all sorts of stuff. But right now, obviously, we're not going to go in that.
So it's a real workflow, a real visual workflow in XAML.
Yeah,
right?
I can show you that, actually. See, it picked up the default template here. So that's, you know, obviously the one we want to pick. But if I open that little thing here, we have a few templates we can pick. So the default is the one that it picked, obviously.
Correct.
The upgrade template is if we move from 2005 or 2008 to 2010, we may want to actually run some MS build script that we had before. So you can actually run that upgrade template and just point it to an MS build and say, go ahead and start the MS build. So that works. And then finally, the lab template we're going to cover maybe later.
Time invested in MS build is not lost.
No, it's not lost.
Okay.
All right? And then finally, what we do is there's a little link here so we can bring it to. Notice that actually the templates are in source control.
Ah, that's cool.
Right? So you can version those, you can actually make a branch of those if you wanted to, and all that. So I'm actually going to open it up. Visual Studio, you know, is a little slow on opening workflow, so, you know, we're just going to look at the little bar go by for a little bit here.
You got all day, man.
Yeah, I know. So it looks a little bit empty here, but it's gonna show.
It's gonna grow.
Don't worry. So you can see here that, you know, get the build, update the build number, and if I go down, you're gonna see there's like ifs and drops. And
that's a workflow.
It's a workflow. So all of this here, you can add a bunch of stuff in here. You can do, set the build agent. You can copy file somewhere else. You can do all sorts of stuff, right? So that's a workflow, the build workflow. We're not going to modify that, but obviously you can, right?
Yeah.
So we're going to go back to our build definition here. And what we need to do now is say, what do we want to build, right? Because that's kind of important. So we're going to go here, and we're going to pick our solution. Notice that we have configurations and solutions here. So I can actually pick the solution I want to use. I'm going to use that solution that we migrated over.
Are you sure in the right place?
It takes the workspace flag we put, and it brings us right there.
Okay.
So we're going to pick that solution. And configuration-wise, we're actually going to add that we want the debug, and we want the x86 platform. All right, just Yeah,
32 bits.
That's fine by me.
32 bits, because that's the one that was working. So now we have what we're going to build. The next thing we want to do is we want to make sure that we run your automated tests, because you spend a lot of time kind of playing with that. So
yeah, we got unit tests.
Exactly. So I'm going to open that up, and it says it's going to run everything called ****.dll. So anything that has the word test in it,
right,
it's going to run all the tests.
That's our naming convention.
Exactly. So if you have, for example, 2005 projects, I don't think you do, but if you did, they had a file called the VSMDI file, and the VSMDI file actually is still available, and you can still do that. So you can pick the list that you want to build as well. So that works great.
All right.
And here we can take a file for our test settings. So we're going to pick our test settings file. And that has, you know, if we want to do some code coverage and all that stuff. So we're going to make sure we have that in there. All right. I'm going to save this. Notice that you can actually do a build number here. So by default, it creates one for you with the year and the date. And dot one is, notice, has a rev here. So that means that every time you do a new build, it's going to increment by one. But there's a ton of macros here, as you can see. So you can create your own number if you want. So a lot of people ask, hey, I want to create my own numbers.
Your own scheme.
Exactly, because I don't really like what's there. So you can create your own and do whatever you need to do here. Right?
Right. Cool.
So right now, we're going to leave the default because that's all good. Finally, we're going to add here a symbol server. You know what a symbol server is?
No, and I'm pretty sure you're going to tell me.
Yeah. So we want to index the source, because when you actually debug stuff, you want to make sure that you can actually do an F10 and enter functions that you don't own. So remember those PDB files that you keep deleting?
Yeah. Well, I'll know how PDB worked.
Yeah, well, it actually generates PDBs, but the symbol server, actually, we copy them over to a share.
Okay, we share it in between the developers.
Correct. So the share is called TFS, TFS lab/symbols. And they're all going to go there, so, and then
every time there's a build, all the PDBs are put in there so that all the developers, when they trace, they use all the same PDBs.
Correct.
So he's not using the source code that's on my machine. It uses the source code that's in
the build that the build created. Exactly. Right. Now, one last thing is that we want to change that to be x86 as well, because that means it's going to take the x86 version of MS build as opposed to the 64-bit version, because our build server is in 64-bit, right?
All right.
So that's pretty much the parameters. Like, there's a bunch of stuff we can change. You know, pick some agents, pick a change set, disable some tests if you don't want to run
I'll leave you tons of times to do that.
All sorts of stuff that we can look at. But right now, those are pretty much the starting things. Finally, the retention policy here is whenever a build succeeds, it's going to keep the latest 10. So I want to keep them all, right? So we're going to keep all the builds that succeed.
Right.
And then the partially succeed is I'm going to keep the latest one, because I don't really, if it's partially succeed, it's not good, right? Mm-hmm. If it fails, I want to keep the last one too, because that's basically, I want the last one that's broken. I don't want to have five that are broken. Doesn't give me much, right?
If the first one's broken.
Exactly. And if I stop it, I want to keep absolutely none of them, right? So if somebody said stop, then I don't care.
There's a reason for this.
Exactly. So remember the symbol. If that would remove things, if we kept only the first 10, for example, then we would go, and then it would actually, after 10, it would start deleting the old ones.
Oh, the last one.
Yes, and it would delete the symbols as well.
Oh.
Because those files are really, really big, right?
Okay.
So it's actually pretty good. It's going to self-regulate.
So you got lots of disk space, or you manage this carefully?
Correct. And then the last thing here is all the things that you're going to delete when you actually delete a build. So now, by default, is get it done. No more.
All right.
The private section is when you create the gated check-in,
yeah,
right? So it's the same kind of idea. We're not going to run any of those, so
we
should be good with that. So we're done. So we created our build.
So we've configured the build, a new build, and what's missing? Should we run this? Can we run that?
Yep.
We
just so we're running it as manual right now to make sure that it works, right? So so I'm just going to queue a new build. So it asks me what build I want to create. There's a one, right? Latest source, the controller. So it puts the default we put in the definition. But we could change them for that one build. Let's say to send it somewhere else.
Recognize that drop folder
used
right there.
And then the parameters are kind of the same deal we had in the other one. So if we want to change them
for this build,
we can do that too, right?
Okay.
So we're just going to queue that. And when we do that, we now have a nice report that kind of starts here. And that needs to warm up the build server, because for today, nobody actually created some builds. So okay. It needs to kind of needs to.
And hopefully that error we got just a little bit before.
Hopefully
it's going to be fixed. And if it's not, then I'll leave you to fix it.
All right, sounds good. So as you can see, we're down to the actual MS build task. That actually says, here's what I'm going to build, what platform I'm going to use, and all that. It's actually looking at different change set that we checked in, the work items, if there was any between builds. It's going to tag all those together. And when it's done, it's actually going to run some tests. And it's actually going to create some symbols. And we should have a completed build.
So right now, it's following the workflow, right?
Correct. And it's actually not building on your machine. It's building on the build server.
That's great. So I can continue working.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah. So right now, I'm looking at the build. But you could go back to source control and kind of play with why this is not working, right? But we're going to do that a little later.
Yeah.
So
let's wait.
Yep. Takes a little bit of a long time to kind of get it going initially.
Well, it's the first build of the day. In fact, it's the first build of our new era with TFS.
It's the first build of our new era. I like that. That sounds grand.
Well, we're grand.
We are. So notice here, there's a little bar here. So that bar is actually the number of seconds that it actually takes. Notice it's now up to 104 seconds. It's kind of long, But again, first time running that stuff. And what's actually neat with this is it's actually a histogram. So when you run multiple builds, you're going to see how long it takes between builds.
And I'll have multiple bars in there.
Correct. And then each bar is actually the build number. So you can actually look at the build number and go back in time and kind of look at it, right? If we go back up a little bit, you can see the actual workflow. So it says overall build process, update the number, create a drop location, run the agent, and then delete the result folder, delete the binaries. So it's actually following all this. So yeah, this MS build task is taking a long time to run here. Oh, there we go. So it created an MS build log file. So if we open that up, remember when you have the little console on the bottom of Studio that says what the problems are? Well, you have all the stuff here.
And okay, notice zero warnings, zero errors. So that's my compile result.
Correct. So that's good stuff. And now it's actually almost done. So it ran your test. We can see
my unit test.
Yep,
see, 15 passed.
Here. 15 ran, 15 passed. That's all good. Now it's actually publishing the source here. So notice all that stuff happened, and you didn't have anything to do.
Well, I didn't do anything for sure.
Yep.
You sounded like you did a few things. But
But how cool is that? You even
very
have,
cool. It's even cooler to see it's green. I'm guessing this is a good sign.
It is a good sign.
All right.
It is a good sign.
Good.
So we have our test results. So if I look at the test, I see it's 100% passed. I see our code coverage. Remember you were asking me, how many?
Oh, yeah.
So we got code coverage
don't
over here.
Don't open it.
Okay. 55. You're not happy with 55%?
Well,
yeah, okay, all right.
I buy that.
So to view the test result, I just need to click on that. And in Studio, when you actually run your test, you have that window here.
Yeah.
Well, we can all see that they're all passing. So if they fail, we can come and see what would happen, right?
Great.
On the build.
And that all ran on another machine than mine.
Exactly. So we got that. So
can we see the output?
So
you told me it was something in drop and stuff.
You want to see the output?
Well, yeah. Not that I'm trusting you, but
I'll show the output. So here they have an open drop folder. So if I open that up, I can see that now I have my output and all that, and we can look at the app a little later.
Yeah, it's my app.
It's your app.
That's great.
In a folder specific for this build and all that. And what we can do also is we can say this build we're going to put in production, right? Of course we will. So we're going to go and look at our the actual report, and we can look at the completed build. So that's the completed build. Notice there's a build quality here. Right?
Yeah.
So I can click
All my builds are good.
Yeah. So I can look at the build quality, and I can see initial test pass. So initial test pass, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty good. So what we can do here is we can add, we can manage those qualities and say, send it to test, let's say.
Oh, okay.
And
sort
then we can
following
say,
where are we at with this build
to,
in our production.
To production, for example, right? And then what we can do with this is we can say this build was actually sent to production.
Straight to production. That one works,
so it's going to production.
It's green, so it works.
And when you do that, one really, really important thing you want to do is you want to actually right-click on here and say retain forever.
Oh, yeah, well, if it goes into prod,
you want to keep that build forever because you may need to come back. You may need to do some stuff. So you want to not have the policy go ahead and kill stuff for you, right?
Oh, okay, this overrides the policy we said a few moments ago.
Exactly. All right?
That's a good thing.
Yep. So now we're all set up. We have our production build. We sent it to production. We locked it forever. Everything sounds good here.
All right. It's break time. So
is it?
I need a coffee.
You need a coffee?
Yeah.
All right. So in this session, we actually saw how to create a build. We talked about what a build is. We talked about the build server, all of the new procedures that go with 2010 here. We had a little bit of an issue with source control. We're going to look at that while you guys go take a coffee, make sure that it's all good for the rest of the day. And we also, like I said, created and ran a build. So Vince,
yep.
Remember that pesky problem we had with source control?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I found the solution.
Good.
I don't know what happened, really. It's kind of bizarre. But for some reason, it went offline.
Oh, you can work offline with TFS.
Yeah, so you can bring your source and bring them home, you know, from your laptop.
That's nice.
But when you open your source, it goes offline. So for some reason, your computer seemed to have lost connection with TFS.
Yeah.
And then it went into a mode where it was offline. So now there's a button right here that's not there anymore because I'm back online. But there's a button that says click here and go back online. So I clicked that and everything came back.
All right, so I can see all my little locks are there.
Locks are there. And I actually did a check-in and it was there.
So. Oh, you tested it?
Yeah, I tested it. So we're all good. Thank you. So any questions?
I like the fact that you keep the PDB files around.
Mm-hmm.
Do you also, do you have a source server also built into that? So if you get a dump from the field, it'll automatically associate it with the version of sources?
So the source server is, so if you had to do that in 2008, it was a real pain in the ass to do. It's really complicated, very complex. Here, it's a share. Put a share, the build server does it all for you. You have nothing to do. You create your share and everything's done. And we're going to use the symbols later in the day. So you'll see what happens when we use them. Yep, exactly. And you'll see that. We'll use that later in the day. But so right now, we're kind of setting it up for use later. But yeah, we could do that.
You also had a question?
Yeah, when a build fails, who gets notified? Like you set up a CI build just now.
Mm-hmm.
So I did the check-in. It kicked off a CI build. Mm-hmm. And it failed. Would I, as a developer who did the check-in, would I get automatically notified?
Okay, so that's a good question. I didn't talk about notification at all, right? But TFS has a whole thing to create some notification when a build failed, when a build succeed, when a work item is changed, that you own is modified and all that. So it has everything. I can show it for you. I can show it to you in the break or whatever. It's not really part of what we're doing here, but I can show it to you. You can set up so that you can receive that. Also, in 2010, there's the tablet application that used to be a power tool. So the little, like, there's a new mail kind of thing that's actually built in visual. It's not built in Studio. It's a tool that you need to run. But you essentially point it to the build that you're interested in. And when it starts, when it finishes, you're going to have a little, like, an email saying it started, it's done, and you get all that. So it's not really an email. So you have notification that things are going on. But you can set it up for an email as well.
So sometimes developers do not put like good comments when they are checked in their code. So if I want to implement some policy like they always answer some questions when check-in,
yes.
Can we implement that? And also, can we configure things like FX cop, style cop, mm-hmm. And check-in should fail if they do not follow, all those standards?
Absolutely. So obviously, we're doing a simplistic demo here. But what you could do in 2005 and 2008, so run fxcop part of the build. So I think it's off by default, it's project default, I think, by default. So if you don't have it set up in your project to run every time, it's not going to do anything. But if in your project you have it to run every time you do a compile on your workstation, it's going to run it in the build as well, right? So right now it's not set up for that, but that's going to work. Let me see. So that was fxcop. You had run test. So, yes, okay, so the check-in policies, that we use that we're still there. So I haven't set it up yet because we don't have a bug yet. So we're gonna have a bug and we're gonna do that. Okay, but essentially yes, you can still do that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, how do you deal with connection string changes from prod to test, UAT, app settings, all those kind of things that need to change, version numbers that you want to follow through on your application? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's great to have the build numbers, but somehow they have to come into your application for the mm-hmm. UI. Mm-hmm. So how do you do all those kind of things?
Okay, so version number-wise, I'll answer that one first, right? So version number-wise, there's a fellow called Jim Lamb. That has a really good blog post on actually creating an activity for the workflow that's actually going to open up your assemblyinfo.cs or .vb or whatever, and it's going to inject the build number, right? So the build number, you actually create something like 1.2.3.4, some scheme that you want, and then essentially the activity that he created will actually strip everything off the build number that is not the number, the four digits, and it's going to take that and it's going to apply it to any field. It uses a regex, so any field that it finds in the assembly info that has dot 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 is going to be replaced by that. So your workstation, when you build, it's always 0.0.0.0 or 1.0.0.0, but when the build runs, the output of the build has the exact number, and that's what you want. I don't care as a developer the build number. That's not my concern, and it shouldn't be. But when it creates the build and the output, when I open the drop folder, that has to have in the file. If I right-click properties, I want to have that number there, right? And you can actually inject the full build number, so, you know, MVVM, blah, blah, blah number, and then in the file assembly info number, and all, you can do all that stuff, right, if you want to. So that is for the version number. That's what you're interested in, right?
Well, the version number for the assembly is fine, but what about the version number that you're going to present in the UI?
Same thing, right? Because if you tag it in the assembly info, what you put in the UI is what's in the assembly info. Okay. All right? So your first question was, remind me again, I...
Oh, the connection strings or any other app settings in a web config file or whatever.
So let me send it back to you. What do you do now?
Manually.
So you go afterwards and you kind of fiddle around with this stuff? All right. So what I recommend people to do is actually create some config files in your project. Put them in a folder called configurations or whatever in your project. Attach that to the project and make sure it goes to the output, right? And then when the build goes off, it's going to actually create that. And then essentially the build has all the configuration from the various environment. And in your deployment document, then you say, well, the guys that are going to deploy, make sure if you're in the test environment, take the test config, copy it over. If you're in the production environment, make sure you take the prod one and copy it over.
Right, but then you're managing multiple configs rather than automating it somehow. You know, you've added an app setting or something. Mm-hmm. Move it over into...
That's a problem that is not solved here, right? Okay. So one thing that they've added in 2010 is, I don't know if you've worked with 2010 a little bit, especially in web application. You now have the web config, and then you have app.dev.config. And what it does is when it compiles it, right, and when it produces the build, it actually generates based on your config. So I picked debug in my config, so it would use an XSLT and take the debug.config and roll it up into the web.config, right? But I'm not in any better shape because I need to run a build to get the config that I want. So I don't want to create a build with, you know, release and a build with, you see what I mean? So unless, because in the config, I could actually say, create me a debug build, create me a release build, create me an X64, an X86, all these in one shot. So it would compile them four times, right? And if I do that, I'll have the proper config with each one of those built. But that's for web project, right? So that particular XSLT change is only with, I think it works with web deploy, but that's what it has, right? So there's multiple ways to deal with that, but it is a complex problem, right? So Microsoft right now is dealing with the middle of the road. So starting from I'm picking up the source and I'm doing stuff all the way to I created a build, right, is great. But afterwards, sucks. And before, requirement gathering and stuff, not really good either, right? So that particular, the middle, awesome. But those two ends, so you can figure out that that's probably what they're going to work on for the next releases, beginning or end or, all right?
The test DLL is just ran there. Does it have to be a MS test?
So MS test is installed on the server.
Yeah.
And those 15 tests that we ran there, it is MS test that actually ran on.
Does it have to be MS test? Can I use like any unit?
Okay. Yes, you can. So you'll need to modify the workflow. Remember the whole workflow I showed? You're going to need to modify the workflow. And at the point where it says generate some tests or run some tests, you're going to have to inject some stuff that's actually going to run NUnit. But yes, you can do that.
So you have to install the NUnit runner?
You're going to have to install NUnit on the server, correct, on the build server.
Okay, yeah, thanks.
And do that.